Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. It's Monday, April 3rd, 2023, live to be broadcast on Wednesday, April 5th on 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician with my co-host, Ron Meniza. We're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut, which is getting beautifuler and beautifuler.
Blur? Is that a word?
Probably not. I was being ironic or silly or something.
Frannish.
Yes. Making up words is a thing I do at times. Please comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You can also check out my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at FranStorchND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on this show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Happy spring. It's been spring for 2 weeks now, and let's talk a little bit about the spring. I'm seeing and hearing more birds. Are you?
Oh, absolutely.
Yes.
Even just before it gets light outside, I heard birds as I was walking into the community center this morning. So definitely hearing birds.
Yes, I was in the bathroom taking care of bodily needs, and I have a window in my bathroom, and there was a little bird on the branch watching me. So I looked to see what it was, and it was hard to tell because, you know, we have a foggy window and a screen, and it's a little bit a ways. So it was hard to tell whether it was a tufted titmouse or a black-capped chickadee because it had something on top of its head. I love to use the Merlin app. I mean, you can use a lot of different apps, but just remember that the Cornell University has a great ornithology department, which means a department where they study birds. And they have some great apps, and a lot of people like to use Merlin. And what you do is, wherever you are in the country, it detects where you are, and then you download a packet into your device, your phone or your tablet, or perhaps your laptop, I don't know, but definitely your phone or your tablet. And you download a packet of bird sounds from the region where you are. So if you're sitting in Connecticut, there's a general region that you are part of, and you download that packet. I took Merlin down to Florida, where I visit my mother, and I was trying to use the Merlin down there, and I wasn't picking up any birds. And then I realized that I had to download the Florida regional packet, and then I started to pick up more birds. So it's really great. You open the app, and it gives you a lot of information. It has a button that you push, and it allows the app to listen to birds that are outside, and by sound, it can identify the bird, which is really cool. And then you can click on the bird that it has identified, and it will give you sample songs from the bird and information about the bird. And it's just a great thing. And when we are in season, I can sit out in my yard at certain times of the day, and in less than 5 minutes, pick up 20 or more birds. We have a lot of birds here because we have Mansfield Hollow. We have a lot of trees.
We live in the woods.
A lot of places where birds like to be. So far, I have definitely seen tufted titmice and chickadees. We hear the chickadees you hear all winter, but the red-winged blackbird is definitely back. I'm hearing them in different places, and they tend to hang out in swampy places. Lots of places like that, and they have that sort of screechy, raspy sound. But they're very pretty because they're black, and then they have this beautiful red underpinning. It's very stylish. Really enjoy it. There's something very cheery about having the birds around. And there's definitely studies that say if you get to be around birds, birds cheer you up, or birds are lifting to your mood. And I have a friend named MJ who is a photographer, and she's a fantastic photographer, and she did some photography for the Farm to Fork Fondo, and she loves to photograph birds. And there was earlier in the year, I don't know if it was January or February, there was a month of Birb Fest, B-I-R-B. And so I'm like, all right, what is a birb? And she was posting these beautiful photographs of birds. So a birb, a B-I-R-B, apparently is a bird that is being cute or silly or funny to us. That there's something really, they have to either be cute or amusing. They can be small or large. Or they can make a funny face at you, and then they are considered a birb. Yeah. So if you see a burb and it looks like it's like absolutely has a little head and has a plump little belly and is just sitting there singing its face off, that's a burb. If you have one of those birds that looks you right in the face and makes and opens its eyes wide and stares at you, definitely a burb. So an emu can do that. And I'm so glad that our neighbors decided that it would be really good to have emus on Bassett's Bridge Road. So it's important. So if you go by the bowling balls in Bassett's Bridge Road, if you're lucky, the emus will be out and you can say hello to them. I was fortunate enough to be able to do that. Yes, emus in Mansfield. Okay. All right. So that's what's going on. I want to talk about other stuff that's going on. Louisiana women won the NCAA Women's Championship basketball. And that was pretty exciting. It was kind of intense. There was some controversy about Angel Reese strutting her stuff and making a sign to the other big... is she the point guard, Angel Reese? What's Angel Reese's deal? Okay.
No, she's a post player.
Post player. Okay. What was Caitlin Ross is our friend.
She's a guard.
Caitlin is a guard, and she they signed each other anyway. It was a thing.
Can I add the controversy of the fashion show that was taking place off of the LSU bench?
Do you mean Kim Mulkey's suit?
Yeah, someone needs to like inform her that she needs a new designer.
I disagree. I think she's rad.
Oh my God.
Because they talked to her. I saw they interviewed her on the Today Show. I know. They interviewed her on the Today Show about her fashion choices. And she said, we're from Louisiana. We like spangles. We like glitter. We like to dress up. I was one of those kids that you'd like to wear a different outfit to school every day. I think it's a hoot that she wore. She wore a sequin, one of those sequin suits. So you know those sequins that if they are flat in one direction, they're one color. And if you push them in the other direction, they're another color. Her suit was like leopard. Let me see.
Yeah.
It was leopard and let's see. I think gold and pink with, no, not leopard, tiger.
Yes,
of course it was tiger.
Because they're the tigers.
The tigers,
right.
Of course, it was with tiger stripes.
The thing is, she wears all these outrageous stuff. She had a pink boa thing on the other day.
That's gold and purple. That's what that is. Duh. Because LSU, gold and purple.
LSU, right.
The other cool thing is
there should be a technical foul called on that woman's dress.
I don't agree at all. I think it's a hoot. Why the heck not? I mean, if you're gonna go in, you know, be loud and proud. I think it's great. And she won the NCAA championship and people will remember her for wearing that crazy outfit. If she had worn a, you know, tan pants and a blue Oxford shirt, people would have been like, yawn. You know, what the heck? I think that was cool. Say what you will about LSU and Iowa. I'm disappointed that the UConn women didn't win, but you know, it was kind of exciting. The nice thing about watching LSU in Iowa is I have no attachment. I don't care who wins. And the same thing with watching the UConn men. I know you care, but it's not as stressful for me to watch the UConn men because I'm not as invested in it as I am in the UConn women. So go Huskies. Anyway, and so tonight we're going to watch that game. I may watch part of the game through my eyelids. Because it's late and I have work in the morning, so... Anyway, so go Huskies. Big shout out. And if you're listening to this on Wednesday, they already won or lost. So let's hope they won and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. So last week, if you didn't notice, I was very uncomfortable in my seat. That's because of something I'll head off today. I know I keep wanting to talk about cardiovascular stuff, but I think I want to talk about this today. I'm feeling so much better. So I can sit up straight. And today I'm doing some stuff to support my back, which I'll tell you about in a sec. But what happened was I had had COVID for the month of early February, I had COVID, and then I had to recover from COVID. And so I was off the bike for a month because I was concerned about pushing myself too much and being in a hypercoagulable state. Fortunately, my D-dimer, which is a measure of coagulability, never got higher. And much to the pleasure of my doc. And so that was good. And I continued to take things that were anti-inflammatory, like curcumin, and things that helped to thin the blood, like vitamin E and resveratrol and SPMs, which are the resolving fraction of fish oil. And so, you know, and eating fruits and vegetables and stuff like that. And so I did fine. And then I got back on the bike on March 1st. And the weather was not very cooperative. So I was on my trainer doing Zwift mostly. And and then a couple times I got out on the road. And really, since March 1st, I've been on the road twice. So I went once with Ron in a hilly ride, but also, you know, a relatively flatter hilly ride, which sounds silly. And then I went on a hillier ride on Sunday the 26th, and it was hillier than I probably should have done for the amount of time that I had had on the bike. And so it put my back in compromise. And I did stretch and I did restorative yoga that same day. And then the next morning I got on the trainer again and I did an easy spin and I was reaching my hand out to touch the tablet as the tablet runs my Zwift. And you know, the old reach and seize, are you familiar with the old reach and seize?
The old reach and seize.
The reach and seize. Yes. I wonder if I've coined a term here. When I explain it to you, you're going to go, oh, that. Okay. So the old reach and seize is your back's kind of sore. Maybe you've been working in the yard a lot or you've been exercising a lot and your back is a little tricky and you may have some ongoing problems with your back anyway. And the best example is you open the refrigerator and you reach for the mayonnaise and your back goes out and you're all of a sudden you're like,
oh, that.
All yeah. I did was reach for the mayonnaise and it went out. And I'm like, no, that's not it. Well, instead of reaching for the mayonnaise, I was reaching for the iPad and same thing happened. My back was already compromised though. So what's going on is you have lots of little micro tears in your back muscles. And do you know that I learned this from Dr. Titchrid, may he rest in peace. We have 7 layers of back muscles and I used to know them all. I could rattle them off and that was a long time ago. And I don't need to know the exact names of all of the back muscles, but I know some basic ones like the paraspinals are the long muscles along the sides of your spine that hold it in place. And then you have the quadratus lumborum, which is a larger, wider, flatter muscle that's roughly below and over your kidneys. And then there's the psoas. Psoas is a big deal muscle. It's an interesting muscle. Its job is to be a hip flexor. And so the psoas muscle is interesting because it's very big and it is bilateral. It goes on both sides of your spine and it has attachments. The most superior, which means basically the highest in your body, attachment is to the front of L4. So attaches in your belly there and then it fans out. It has attachments to your actual hips. And then it crosses over your hips onto your femur and it's a hip flexor. So it pulls your legs up. So as you can imagine, if your hip flexors get tight, which they will if you ride a bike because you're in a seated position for a very long time, if your hip flexors get tight, it pulls your back down. And then if your hamstrings, which are the muscles that bend your knees, if they get tight, then they pull your back in too. So if your hamstrings and your hip flexors are tight, it's going to pull your back down and it's going to pull your back into a less than optimal position and you're going to be more likely to pull it. So it's a good idea to be stretching your hamstrings. If you have a lot of back trouble, very, very important to stretch your hip flexors and your hamstrings regularly. And especially if you've just done an activity where you are accessing them, like cycling. Now, of course, in the last week, what I did, so I did the old reach and seize, and when you saw me on Monday morning, it had just happened, and I was having trouble, like, doing things like washing my feet and bending up and down, and I was in a lot of pain. And so I managed to get through my day and got through and made it to the chiropractor, and the chiropractor did a lot of work on me, and it felt a lot better. I didn't do my yoga class that night. I might have done a little yin stretching, and that was good. And then gradually over the course of the week, it got better and better. I did another chiropractic appointment the following Wednesday. So what would I do without my chiropractor? I don't know. Highly recommend chiropractic. Highly recommend getting massage. So there's lots of things you can do for your lower back. So before I go on to just give you a few tips on how to take care of your lower back, Ron, why don't you tell us what's going on with your lower back?
My lower back?
Yeah.
Right now, my lower back's pretty good. It comes and goes, but it's not in bad shape right now. I've been doing a lot more yoga, which has been very helpful for my lower back. I think that's been a good thing.
When do you do yoga?
I do yoga in the morning before I leave to go teach at the gym. Sometimes I do it right after my class at the gym when I've taught my class. And then I also have a class that I teach, which is a cycle and yoga class on Tuesday evening. So that's when I do yoga.
Do you have a favorite pose that helps you with your back?
Child's pose seems to be pretty good. I can do a lot with child's pose. Mm-hmm. I can do a lot with happy baby. Mm-hmm. Is nice.
Yes.
I really like to just reach up and grab onto my knees and give myself a good hug and lift.
Right. And so that's double wind relieving pose.
Right. And then I also like to windmill my legs with my feet flat on the mat and my hips flat on the mat and
right.
then windmill
you
side
go
to side.
Side to side, yeah.
Right.
Windshield wiper.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
do you, so you know that, so you're doing that basically double wind relieving pose where you're, and it's called wind relieving pose for obvious reasons.
Right.
So
yes.
just, so you're pulling both knees into your chest and hugging them.
Yes.
Yes. So do you also hug one leg at a time?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Hugging with the other leg extended all the way out. And yeah.
So another thing you can do if you want to do, if you can't do this because it's too much, it's too hard for your back, then skip it. But one of the things you can do is get a block and put the block under your sacrum at its lowest level, whatever mm-hmm. level you can handle. Mm-hmm. The higher you put it, the more intense it will be. But I would say start on the lowest level. It's fine to do. You can also use a pillow or a bolster and put it under your sacrum. You can do your wind relieving pose that way. You can also hold on to your knee and straighten the other leg. So it's half wind relieving pose.
Yep.
But do it propped up on a block or a bolster.
Or on a foam roller.
Foam roller works too.
A lot. I use that a lot.
And if you do that, then you have, it's an upside down Anjaneyasana, which is upside down knee down warrior. So knee down warrior is also a great pose to help your hip flexor. It's where you're in basically a runner's stretch, but your knee is on the ground, and then you lean into your hip flexor where your one of your legs is at a 90-degree angle, and it's a great way to get a hip flexor stretch. Mm-hmm. But if you lie on your back and prop your sacrum up and hold on to one knee at a time, the opposite leg that's straightened out, you actually are getting it. It's gravity is pulling that hip flexor down, so you get a hip flexor stretch that way. It's a really good thing to do. And then you can get a hamstring stretch on your back without having. So this is ways you can do it. If your back is compromised, you can lie down and do these things. You can stretch your leg. All you have to do is lie down and stretch your leg, one of your legs in the air, and straighten it as much as you can. And it doesn't have to be completely straight. It should be only as straight as is comfortable for you. And you can hold onto the leg anywhere except for behind the knee. You can hold on behind your thigh. You can hold on behind your calf. You can hold onto your foot. And if you can't reach any of that, a good thing to do is get a strap. They sell yoga straps that are meant for yoga. If you don't have a yoga strap, you can use a scarf, you can use a belt, and then you put it around the sole of your foot and you pull on it, and you can get a hamstring stretch that way.
And an expired bicycle inner tube.
There you go, an expired bicycle inner tube. That works too. And you know, what's wonderful is when I'm doing online yoga, the expectation of the teachers is that you don't necessarily have real yoga props at home. Even though I do, I have a bolster, a real yoga bolster, and I have blocks, and I have a strap. I have all those things. I don't have a bolster, but I'm thinking of getting one for Florida. I have blocks and a strap in Florida, and in the room I do yoga in my mother's house, I just use the couch cushions, which is something that the online teachers suggest. If you don't have a bolster, get couch cushions. They're fine. Couch cushions or pillows, they're fine. Use whatever you have. So there's lovely stretches you can do to maintain your back. I also find that you don't necessarily want to do this when you're in acute spasm, but I find that a regular practice of planks keeps my spine in alignment. And so when my back got a little bit better and I was ready to go back to yoga class, you do the vinyasas. And when you do a vinyasa, vinyasa is where you flow, you're in down dog, and then you come down and you gradually lower yourself on your arms. It's like you're lowering the second half of a push-up. You lower yourself down and then you come up into a back bend. Whether it's upward facing dog or cobra pose, one of those two, and then you go back into downward facing dog, and it's called a chaturanga when you do that. Well, actually, it's called a vinyasa. Chaturanga is when you go down. And I found that when I did more of those, it set my back right again. And then in a couple of the classes, we did some planks, and I'll go back to doing my resistance training tomorrow. And half of my resistance training workout is core exercises. So core exercises are really important for keeping your back straight. So the other thing is, if you have done some unaccustomed exercise, to prevent yourself from doing the old reach and seize, it's really important to drink lots of water when you do that. I may not have done that right. Drink lots of water. Make sure you do some stretching. Make sure you do some resting. And try to be mindful about reaching, because that reaching pulls on the back muscles in a way that will send you into spasm. So you might, if your back is a little flared but you're not seized, you may want to be mindful of that. And instead of really quick reaching for something, lean forward to touch something, and don't reach your arm too far for it until your back is calmed down, and then make sure that you're drinking and you're resting and you're doing hip flexor, all those things, hip flexor stretches. Craig reminds us that twisting is also a really good idea for lower back stuff. And that is absolutely true. And twist, you can do any kind of twist you want. A seated twist is fine, where you have one leg straight and the other leg draped over it. You can twist that way. You can bend both legs and put one leg over the other one. And then certainly twists, different kinds of twists lying on your back. I like reclined pigeon, where you're lying on your back and one leg is crossed over the other knee. That's a really helpful one. And then you can also just lie straight down, bend your knees and drop both knees to one side. And they can be stacked on top of the other so that your hips are stacked on top of the other. You can also do eagle legs, where you cross one leg over the other and drop those legs to one side. And you push both shoulders down to the ground, and that gives your lower spine a nice twist. And so when you twist, you're putting compression on muscles on that side of the spine. And the real magic happens when you release the pose. I mean, you're stretching the muscles on one side and compressing them on the other. And then when you release, you get a flood of circulation to the side that was compressed. And then, of course, you do it to both sides to make it even. Be careful of overdoing it. So people are going to overdo it right now because the weather's been kind of crummy. And now all of a sudden this week, we're going to have 60 degrees. Not today, but Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, I think we're going to hit 60. We might hit 70 tomorrow. I'm bringing a short sleeve shirt to work and no tights. So, yeah, and maybe some shorts. I don't know. But yeah, it's supposed to be rather warm tomorrow, even though it's going to rain. And we're going to have like rainy, icky tomorrow and Wednesday. And then Thursday into the weekend, I think it's supposed to get better. But temperature's going to drop into the weekend. So then we'll be back in the 50s. Oh, well. And so one thing that I learned is I made the mistake of, well, what I did was I looked at the wind and I said, all right, the wind's out of the north. Of course, I want to go north. So I did this northerly route, and I have a nice little route that I do. It's only 21 miles. I know, only 21 miles. And I go up one of our state roads, and then I just cross over. And there's some hilly roads that I climb up. And then I turn to the right and I'm crossing the ridge, and then I come back down a state road, and that's what I did. But it was more than my back could handle because it was only the second time I'd been on the road since having COVID. So I needed more time on the road. I have to learn that I can't compare Zwift to the road. That I have to ease back onto the road, even though, because the problem with doing trainer, even if it's Zwift versus road, is that is that you're not moving your body weight. You're not moving your body weight forward. You're not balancing. You're not using balance as much, and you're not using your body weight to propel your bike forward. And so when you're climbing a hill, you're basically just moving against resistance on the bike, and you're not using your body. There's no propulsion. So I needed a gentler reentry into climbing. So I'm hoping to climb a little bit more civilly this weekend and ease into it, and then do a lot of stretching afterwards. So stuff you can put on your back, and stuff you can take. Now, the thing is, I take a lot of stuff to help myself. There's this thing called SPMs, and what they are is they are an X-track, and I can never remember what they stand for. What does SPM stand for? And if you find it before me, you tell me. SPM supplement. What is SPM supplement? It is a science-based supplement. It is specialized pro-resolving mediators. That's what SPMs are. And they're an extract of fish oil. So one of the great things about taking fish oil is that fish oil has compounds in it called resolvins. And resolvins are compounds that help to calm inflammation. They're really good at that. And if you take the concentrated SPMs, they really help to calm the inflammation. So I'm taking SPM. I take an SPM supplement every day. Maybe I should take extra because, you know, back's a little sore. I take that, and I take curcumin. I take good quality curcumin every day, and I take resveratrol. So I'm taking some good stuff that reduces inflammation, and then I take things that calm muscles and help muscles to and nerves to work a little more calmly. I'm taking magnesium, and I'm taking taurine, which are both membrane stabilizers. They help help nerves and muscles to function in a more flowy way. So I'm doing all of that. But all the resolvins and fish oil and magnesium and taurine are not going to help you if you push yourself too hard. You still have to warm up the muscles and help them. And the thing is, I'm consuming food to help to nourish my muscles, like our lovely soups with bone broth and all of the protein that we're eating. And I have a protein shake that I'm consuming every day. That's an animal-based protein shake. So I'm taking bone broth protein, and I'm finding it very good. Bone broth protein was a boon to me. I'm really thrilled about it because I was not doing well with whey protein when I was taking it last year. It was giving me a lot of stomach upset because I have a certain level of dairy intolerance. Last year, I was not doing well with dairy at all. Now I can have little bites of it now and again, but I'm mostly staying away from it, and I'm certainly not doing it in a protein shake. I used to take yellow pea protein as a protein shake, and I found that I tolerated it pretty well, but I think that the bone broth protein I tolerate even better, and it's really nourishing. It feels good going down, and I had some digestive upset where I was getting a little bit of heartburn, and that has mostly resolved. A lot of my when I had my issues post-vaccine last year, and perhaps some issues post-COVID, I haven't done as poorly as I did last year after third vaccine that I had. And I had some irritable bowel symptoms. And those seem to have calmed down a great deal. I'm very pleased with that. I'm also taking a high organism count probiotic. And it's got 50 billion probiotics, and it's got some women-specific probiotic stuff in it. So I've been taking that for the last little while, and it's not a shelf-stable one. It's one that I keep in the fridge, and just one pill a day, and it's really helping, I think. Because you got a couple things going on. When you take bone broth protein has collagen in it and has immune globulins. The collagen helps to rebuild the lining of your digestive system, and it can also help to rebuild any collagenous structures, bones, muscles, joints. So I have that going on, and I have, and then it has immune globulins in it, which help your immune system. And then you have probiotics, and probiotics do a lot of wonderful things for you. And probiotics make immune compounds that make your immune system work better. They make anti-inflammatory compounds. They make B vitamins. They also outcompete bad bacteria. And so bad bacteria will make endotoxins for you, and that they will tend to inflame you. And bad bacteria will also reactivate compounds that have made it into your digestive system for that you can then reabsorb. And when you reabsorb them, then they can cause problems. So, for example, your body that has a homeostasis around reproductive hormones, your estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, DHEA, cortisol, and you excrete extra in your stool, and it gets tacked on with a hydroxyl group, which makes it more water soluble, so it can dissolve better in bile. And when it makes it into your large intestine, the bad bacteria can cleave off that hydroxyl group, and then you can reabsorb it. So then what your liver decided, all right, that's too much, I'm sending this out, you reabsorb. And then your liver has to work hard to take care of that all over again. And you have to, and then you have the effects of these excess hormones. So probiotics can help to prevent against that. And the other thing probiotics do is they make a lovely lining, a lovely protective lining along the course of your digestive system. And so especially in your colon. It's called a colon because there are colonies of bacteria and viruses and all kinds of stuff living in your digestive system. And so that's why it's called a colon, because of the colonies. And most of the probiotics in your body are in your colon. And most of your immune system is in your colon. And you have amazing lymphatics, Peyer's patches all through your large intestine that have lymphatic tissue. And those are little rests of glandular tissue that hold on to white blood cells and fight infection for you. So having probiotics on board is a really good thing. All right. So anyway, more stuff for your back. Absolutely, exercises can help you. Not overdoing it. Easing into exercise. We're in a transition time right now. So please be very mindful of that. We're literally going from literally having patients who didn't walk the last 3 weeks and are going to start walking this week because all of a sudden the weather is nice. So don't overdo it. If you've been sitting around, if you've been sitting inside and cold because, you know, we have some days that there's mixed precipitation. Mm. I looked at the long range and there's some mixed precipitation planned for, I think, a week from today that we could get some, you know, snow and ice stuff. It's not going to be anything that sticks, but the weather's still going to be all over the place. April is a kind of capricious month when it comes to weather. You never know what you're going to get. That's why Bette Midler sang, like a rose under the April snow. Because April snow, right? It can happen. Well, it's certainly happening in other parts of the country. You know, there's still plenty of snow up north. So, you know, people are still skiing and stuff. And fine. So, other stuff for your back. So there's a few things that I take. I take I take ligament and tendon glandular. So there are glandular products that are made of ligaments and tendons and have extra manganese in them. And manganese can help with the structure of your ligaments and tendons. And so I take that. It's a glandular from a specific company. And there are other companies that, you know, carry different products for your ligaments and tendons. There's a few different companies. And they have, of course, they have the bone broth protein. And then topically, there's definitely topical things that you can use. Topically, I like to use EFAC, esterified fatty acid. So it's a cream that has menthol and esterified fatty acid. So I put that on topically. It feels very cooling because of the menthol. But I put that on most days. That goes on my back. It goes on my knees. I had broken my right arm a couple of years ago. So I put a little bit there as well. And Dr. Schweiger, who was my orthopedist at the time, he said, on rainy days, your arm's going to ache. And the arm, so I broke my arm, if you can see on Facebook Live, I broke it right around here. But I think I whacked my coracoid process. The coracoid process is part of your clavicle, your collarbone. And it's a little piece that sticks out. It's normal. And it's got some muscular attachments there. And I had some bruising over my coracoid process. And Dr. Schweiger said, I think that's just because when you crack a bone, there's a blood supply there. So when you break your bone, you bruise, right? Have you experienced that? Yeah. So you can get some pretty nasty bruising. And I was all colors of the rainbow, you know, mostly purple and yellow, but go LSU. Maybe that's why they're purple and yellow. Anyway, but yeah, I had some pretty monster bruising on my arm, and it went all the way into the right side of my chest. And Dr. Schweiger said, I think that that's, you know, that's just flow. It flowed from over there. You got a pretty nasty bruise, and it bled into the tissue over there. I don't know if that's correct. I think I whacked my coracoid process too, because it aches right here on that, in that upper part of my chest. And so it's a pain that comes and goes. I'm like, oh no, am I having a heart attack? Well, it's on the wrong side, but I keep forgetting it's in the exact right spot where I fell and hurt myself and had bruising. So anyway, so it tends, today it's perfectly fine. And we have gorgeous weather today. It's, you know, if you look at the sun outside, it's got, we got high pressure. So that may be something that happens to you, that you, your joints and your back can tell what the weather's doing. That's totally a thing, that you have baroreceptors that get activated when the atmospheric pressure changes. And so you definitely can tell the weather to an extent with your joints and your muscles. So I get some pain there. So I'll put the esterified fatty acid cream there. I also have a magnesium spray, which is invaluable. We call it magnesium oil because it is oily, but there's no oil in it. It's just a spray that has magnesium. I believe it's magnesium chloride, but it has a form of magnesium in it that makes, it's in solution. It's probably a pretty concentrated solution, and it's topical magnesium. And so it'll absorb into your skin to some extent, but what it'll definitely do whenever you put magnesium on topically, like when you use Epsom salt baths or whether you use this magnesium solution, it's going to interact with the nerve endings in that area. And it's going to tell the nerve endings, okay, you could calm down. And so when the nerve endings calm down, they are connected to all the other nerves that they're a branch of. So everything signals through, so it calms down. So I put, first I put the EFEC on, and then I put the magnesium oil on. I also have a tendon salve that has, it has goldenrod in it, and no, goldenrod doesn't tend to give your allergies. The pollens are too big. People think they're allergic to goldenrod because it blooms at the same time as ragweed, which most people are, who have allergies, are allergic to. And ragweed's very irritating. On purpose, I once inhaled some ragweed, and it gave me a pretty bad sneezing fit, even though I don't know if I have ragweed allergies. I don't have a lot of outdoor allergies. My big thing is dust and mold, mostly dust, a little bit to mold. Solidago goldenrod is a wonderful anti-inflammatory. Big shout out to Susan Weed for introducing me to that one. And so it's goldenrod, and it has comfrey in it, and comfrey is amazing for muscles, bones, joints, tendons. And so the salve is mostly comfrey and goldenrod, and that's what's in it. So I'll put that on as well. And also root of graviolans. That's another one. It's a great herb to help with, particularly for tendons and muscles. If you tend to sprain ankles, the homeopathic root of graviolans is wonderful. You can also put salves of root and tinctures of root on your ankles if you tend to sprain your ankles. Anyway, so I'll use that salve as well. I also dug out a salve that I found, and it was from a CBD company in Vermont. And it's a lovely salve. It's got beeswax and shea butter. It's all organic, and it has some menthol. Because menthol, I think they put menthol in it. Menthol might be cheating a little bit. I mean, menthol does make you feel better, but menthol gives you a sensation like something's happening, you know. And quite frankly, menthol is thought of in herbal medicine as an anodyne. It's something that does take away pain. So this product has menthol and shea butter and beeswax, which makes it spread on nicely. And it's a pretty hard salve, so a little goes a long way. It has CBD in it, cannabidiols from the hemp plant. And then it's got some frankincense in it. And frankincense, another lovely anti-inflammatory herb. Frankincense, also known as boswellia. And you can take boswellia internally. You can also use it topically. And there are companies that promote essential oils that have a frankincense that they can encourage you to use topically. But this salve is very nice. And my right knee has been a little bit tweaky. And so before I went to bed, I put on the tendon salve and the CBD salve, And really, it was really helpful. So if you can find a nice CBD salve that you like that has some other things in it, and I think there was arnica in it as well. It's arnica and frankincense and menthol and CBD. And then the carriers of shea butter. Shea butter is just so lovely and creamy. It's so luxurious putting it on. This great big nut from Africa. It has this really, and it grows in the tropics, has this really heavy saturated fatty acid that's just really good for your skin. You can eat it too. But it's really, you know, people use it topically for all kinds of things. It's very nourishing to your skin. You can use shea butter on hemorrhoids even, and they're nice and soothing and anti-inflammatory. So that's a nice thing to do. And so those are topicals that I use. So what did we say? We said CBD with frankincense and arnica. I've used comfrey and goldenrod. And I've used esterified fatty acids, also known as EFAC. And comfrey, we said the comfrey and goldenrod. And root of graviolans, don't forget that. So those all can be helpful. And then magnesium, topical magnesium can also be helpful. So great. So those are some things that you do for your back. All right. So now we have 20 minutes left. I'm just thinking if there's anything else I wanted to tell you about backs for the moment. And just that I have spondylosis. So if I ever get a CAT scan, you know, a CAT scan for something unrelated, like is your back pain a kidney stone or what? Like I did last September. They'll take the CAT scan. The CAT scan will come back. No kidney stone. Everything looks good. All your organs look great. You do have spondylosis, though. So what the heck is spondylosis? What's spondylosis?
I have no idea.
Spondylosis is just a term. When you have an osis, it just means you have something wrong with you. That's all it means. It's a Greek term, the Greek suffix that means there's something wrong with you. And spondylosis means there's something wrong with your spine. That's it. So spondylosis, when they make a diagnosis of spondylosis, they can see that there's degeneration in the discs. There could be degeneration. There could be bulging. On a CAT scan, you're not going to see a lot of detail. I had more detail when I had my MRI. And I had the MRI in 2011, which is a long time ago. And I had it then. And I don't know that it's gotten much better because life happens. So I just kind of have to manage it. And I inherited this from my dad. Thank you very much, Daddy in heaven. My daddy. My daddy gave me spondylosis. My poor dad had trouble driving long distances, although, you know, he and my mom wanted to travel in the RV. And they weren't able to do a lot of that because if my dad sat too long, he got sciatica. I've had sciatica twice. I had it in 2003 and again in 2011. And I haven't had it since, which is so exciting. And I think it's because of the core work that I do. It keeps my spine in enough alignment that that I don't get enough herniation to press on that sciatic nerve sheath anymore. So as bad as my spondylosis is, I don't tend to get sciatic. I do occasionally pull my back enough to interfere with my life. So I have to be careful with that. So, right. So doing it. And so Craig shouts out that doing yoga with twisting, I'm doing regular yoga. And of course, doing regular yoga, you're going to do things to balance your spine on either side. So that's helpful too. The other thing to think about, which I'm not very good with, but I probably should do, is I have incredibly flat feet. I have convex arches, which is pretty humorous. And so Dr. Suez, my chiropractor, over the years, he's been, you really should be wearing orthotics, you should be wearing inserts. And like a lot of people, I'll get the inserts and then I don't wear them because they're not particularly comfortable because they change the way that you stand and you feel like you're standing on something. And yet when I put the orthotics on, they put me back into alignment. And he thinks that my misalignment is making my my knees cave in, which is making my hips cave in. It's pulling my spine inward and that's putting more pressure on my lower spine. So getting inserts, you know, there's those ads for one of those stores that says if you're having trouble with your spine, it could be emanating from your feet. They are not wrong. And so if you have any foot issues, if you have incredibly high arches or incredibly low arches, or you have foot pain, it's a good idea to get that looked at and get that taken care of, because your feet can absolutely affect how your spine behaves. So get inserts if that's something that can be helpful for you. And you can also do exercises for your feet where you massage them and straighten them and rub them on an AccuBall, which is a little ball with little protuberances, little projections on it to hit your acupuncture points on your feet, your meridian ends on your feet. So that can be helpful too. And so getting your chiropractor to also work on your feet is a good idea, or going to see the podiatrist is a good idea as well. And so those are all things that are helpful. All right. I think that we have exhausted backs for the moment. If you have more questions about backs, please send them to me at radionaturopath@gmail.com, or comment below, or however you'd like to get a hold of me would be fine. All right, so let's get started on cardiovascular stuff. So let's start with this ApoB100. I think Ron looked at the ApoB100 once and was pretty impressed with that as a measure. So it's a protein that plays a role in moving cholesterol around in your body, and it's a form of low-density lipoprotein, LDL. And if there's a gene that directs your body's production of ApoB100, it can cause familial hypercholesterolemia. So there are some people who, no matter what they do, they can't seem to get their cholesterol down, and they basically have to take statins, and then you give them the statins and they have all kinds of side effects and they don't want to take the statins. I can't tell you how many patients I have who have that problem, that they kind of need the statins because their cholesterol is so high, and they try different statins and they're absolutely miserable on them.
You're in pain all the time.
Right. It gives you, right. And that's what happens. You get pain. You can get brain fog. What kinds of side effects do you have from your statins?
Primarily it's pain. It's leg pain, joint pain.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, even like I wake up really, really stiff in the morning in my knees and my hips. And but if I try to exert myself beyond my into my zone 3 up to zone 4 of cardiovascular effort, it's really, really hard for me to sustain it because my legs hurt so bad. So it's really not pleasant. And
no.
I'm going to my cardiologist on Thursday, and we're going to have a discussion about it and see if maybe he has a solution of some sort. But I have a funny feeling it's just transferring to another drug, I'm afraid.
Right, because that's what they do.
That's
they
what
try
they generally
on...
do. So it's really maddening, because everyone I've talked to that has issues with statins, if they stop using the statins for 2 weeks,
it all goes away.
Right. But then if you stop using the statins for 2 weeks, your cholesterol climbs way back up. So what's the answer? Live in pain?
I don't know. Or find other ways to prevent atherosclerotic cardiovascular disease.
Right.
You know, eat a lot less sugar. You're getting plenty of cardio exercise, but you eat a lot less sugar, take antioxidants.
Right, I do that.
I mean, I have patients who have, no matter what I do, they have small dense LDL, and they don't want to take statins, or they take statins and they feel bad on them. So I do everything else I can. I encourage them to exercise. We'll talk about that. But I wanted to talk about what ApoB is. It is the primary apolipoprotein of so it carries chylomicrons, VLDL, lipoprotein little a, intermediate density lipoprotein, and LDL particles. And so it carries this around in the body. It's not clear entirely what its function is. It's the organizing protein of the entire complex shell that carries all these fat molecules. And it's required for the formation of these particles. What's also clear is that ApoB on the LDL particle is a ligand for LDL receptors in various cells through the body. So ApoB makes it more likely for LDL to stick to your arteries. So the high levels of ApoB, which are associated with the higher LDL particle concentration, are the primary driver of plaques that cause vascular disease. So if you have high ApoB, you're gonna be more likely to have increased cardiovascular plaques. And then of course cardiovascular plaques become symptomatic as heart disease. So somebody should be measuring your ApoB100. And there's evidence that hot concentrations of ApoB, and when you do the NMR assay to test for it, they're great indicators of vascular and cardiovascular disease. That's a much more specific test than either total cholesterol or even LDL cholesterol, as long promoted by the NIH. So it's probably more. So if you have high LDL and you have low apolipoprotein B100, you're probably at lower cardiovascular risk. And most doctors don't measure it. I haven't measured it as much lately, but I probably should. And high levels are related to heart disease. So hypobeta lipoproteinemia is a genetic disorder that can be caused by a mutation in the ApoB gene. So there's a gene. So if you have high levels of ApoB, then it's important to get your LDL numbers down. And if you can't get them down by normal means, sometimes it could be a good idea to take a statin. So people will say to me, well, can I just take red yeast rice? And I'm like, well, yeah, you can take red yeast rice, but guess how red yeast rice works? It has lovastatin. It has a compound in it that's similar to lovastatin. It's basically a statin. So, you know, it can work for you. But you have to do all the other things to help to prevent atherosclerosis. Now, Ron saved his own life by having years and years of cardiovascular activity, and he was growing atherosclerosis in his coronary arteries. He may have a gene where he makes a lot of ApoB100. So the thing is, if you have a drug on board that suppresses your LDL production, then the ApoB100 doesn't have anything to carry to the inside of the arteries, so you're less likely to make plaques. So it has some merit there. But I don't think it's a good idea to be throwing statins at anybody who has an LDL over 100. I think it's a good idea to test for these other factors. Does the person have large, dense, or small, large buoyant or small, dense LDL? And is their ApoB100 elevated? If there is high ApoB100, then you're more likely to have, there's the Interheart study found that the ApoB100 to ApoA1 ratio is more effective at predicting heart attack risk in patients who had an acute myocardial infarction than either the ApoB100 or ApoA1 measure alone. ApoA1 is the main protein that carries HDL. So in the general population, this is unclear, although a recent study of ApoB was the strongest risk marker for cardiovascular events. So you probably want to talk to your cardiologist about testing your, what you really need is your ApoB100 to ApoA1 ratio. That's what you really want.
Okay. Yeah. Is that a blood test?
Yeah.
Yeah.
A simple blood test. It's something they can order for you. And
well, we're going to write a bunch of things down before I go.
Write a bunch of things down. Okay.
Because I won't remember any of this.
No. And so you have to sit me down and interview me and
okay.
Write them down.
Yep.
Right. So don't forget to do that before you go to your cardiologist.
I won't.
Okay. So anyway, let's get into how statins work, and then I'll get started on that, and then we have to go.
Right.
So basically, so I think I'm really running out of time. So I'm just going to basically say that statins, what a statin is, it's a drug that is an HMG-CoA reductase inhibitor. HMG-CoA reductase inhibitors, so it's an enzyme that converts converts fatty acids into cholesterol. Also, downline of this HMG-CoA reductase is coenzyme Q10. So your body makes coenzyme Q10. It is not an essential nutrient. You can make your own CoQ10, but people take extra anyway. So when you take an HMG-CoA reductase inhibitor, which is all of your statins, anything that ends in the word statin, is an HMG-CoA reductase inhibitor. And so this blockage of CoQ10 is thought to be part of the mechanism by which you get all your symptoms, including your possibility of getting rhabdomyolysis, which is the worst outcome of taking a statin. It's where you have muscle breakdown, where you dump myoglobin, which is the oxygen-bearing compound that's in your muscles. when you dump excess of it into your blood and your kidneys try to process it out and they can't get it all through, and then you get this muscle breakdown and you can get kidney failure from it. You don't see rhabdomyolysis every day, but we've always been taught that if you take coenzyme Q10, you're going to be less likely to get it. So we'll go more in depth into how statins work next week, because it is time to go. So it was nice to talk to you about how to take care of your sore back, because I had a sore back, and now Ron is trying to take care of his cholesterol, so we thought we'd talk about that too. And then it might be a good idea to ask your doctor to do a ratio of your ApoB100 to ApoA1. I'll find out for you if that ratio needs to be, I'm assuming that number needs to be low, because you want your ApoA1 levels to be higher, because that's the one that's associated with HDL, high density lipoprotein, which is cardioprotective, and you want your levels of ApoB100 to be lower. So the ratio, so if you have a lot of ApoB100, but you have even more ApoA1, a nice high proportion of ApoA1, that ApoA1 is going to protect you from all the ApoB100 that you have. So there you go. Mm. All right. So we talked about backs, and we got started on on cardiovascular disease, and we'll pick up where we left off next week. You have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You can also leave questions or comments at my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS stores, and WHUS.org.